Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 13th, 2009, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, Macworld 09 from a photography perspective. Well, welcome back. I've been spending the week in San Francisco talking about photography, thinking about photography, and looking at photography. And there's a lot to report, so I thought I would take this show to sort of bring you up to speed on the things that I saw at the beginning of 09 and maybe kind of set the pace for the rest of the year, especially for those using the Mac. Although if you're not using a Mac and listening to this show, which I know many of you are, there are a lot of trends here that will apply also. So don't tune out just because it's Macworld, because Macworld covers a very, very broad landscape. So there's a couple things in particular I want to talk about. I'm going to start out with the classes I was teaching and the sessions that I was in, because there was a lot of back and forth, and I really sort of got a feel for where people are right now in terms of digital photography. And then I also want to talk about iPhoto 09, because that was probably one of the bigger announcements at the show. And then I have a couple other bits and bobs too. But let's start out with photography in general, photography itself. So the beginning of the week, I taught a two-day workshop on aperture. And then I kind of rolled into teaching CS4 for the rest of the week. And then I was also part of Rick Simolin's State of the Art of Digital Photography panel discussion, which went quite well. And it was nice. There was four of us talking about what we thought the trends were in photography from our point of view. And we had a really good turnout for that. On the aperture front, the workshop was very well attended. And the thing that I've noticed about aperture is that now I think it is on the radar of most folks, especially photographers using a Macintosh. You know, in the beginning, I was sort of having to explain what aperture was and why it was created and how to use it. And now folks, they sort of know that. They know that this is a heavy-duty photo management application that is getting easier to learn all the time, and that can do all sorts of stuff. So, and I actually had folks in the class who had been in my aperture trainings before. So now the way that it feels that aperture is maturing a little bit, so is the audience. And I think folks now are more interested in learning how to use it better, learning how to use it more efficiently. Now, when I was doing panel discussions, we did one on Sunday night at Book Passage in Corte Madera, and that was a broad panel discussion where we talked about everything in photography. And then I did another broad panel discussion at the Apple Store on Thursday night, and then the State of the Art. It was interesting, if I didn't bring up aperture at the panel discussion, then someone would actually ask me about it. You know, we start out talking about Photoshop on the post-production side, as we typically do. It's the application still that most folks are familiar with. And then that would a lot of times evolve into talking about Lightroom. But then there would always be a section of the audience that wanted to talk about aperture too. And that sort of leads me to believe that aperture is definitely part of the big three. Photoshop CS4 or CS3, for those who haven't updated yet. And then Lightroom 2.0 and then Aperture 2 also. Now, so that was good. And in general health, I think aperture is doing great. Its market share is increasing. Now, on a side note, I want to talk about iPhoto for just a second before I get to CS4, because I really believe that this version of iPhoto that we're seeing right now, iPhoto 09, which will be shipping at the end of this month, is a preview for some of the things that we're going to see in Aperture when the next version of Aperture comes out. So the big news with iPhoto 09 that was announced, as you've probably already heard if you follow these things, is that they introduced two new ways to group your photos. Before, we always had events. That was introduced in iPhoto 08. And that allowed you to see your photos based on timeline. And iPhoto would automatically group images together based on, you know, some sort of timeline that you established. A day's shoot, a week's shoot, so on and so forth. So in iPhoto 09, they introduced two other ways. One is called Faces, and the other is called Places. With Faces, they actually put face recognition technology into the application so that you could pick a person, a shot of a person, tell iPhoto to log it in into its database, into its face recognition technology, and then find other faces throughout your entire library that matched that face. Now, there's a little training that goes on here. When you first do that and you give the face a name, then iPhoto will give you a whole bunch of other faces that feel similar. Some will be the person and some will not. So then you fine-tune the technology by selecting more shots that iPhoto presents to you or from them, and then saying, yes, this is Bob, this is Bob, this is Bob, and then that becomes part of that Bob collection. And then iPhoto will present more faces to you, and it gets better at it. It keeps getting better at it. So that pretty soon, all you have to do is just click on an icon of Bob, and you will see all the pictures that iPhoto has cataloged within the library of Bob. And you can do this basically for every person that you have in there. And so the training part, and I went through, even though the software hasn't shipped yet, I went through an extended demo there at the Apple booth, and the training of the software is pretty easy, and it does definitely get smarter. So, and then once you have those collected, you can do all sorts of things with them. You can put them in a smart album. It has sort of like a cork board where it'll put one shot of each person on there, and then you can cycle through those shots easily or open it up. So face technology in iPhoto, I think, is definitely a trend that we're going to see go into Aperture and probably other places also. Because a lot of times we really do want to see all the shots of a particular person. It's especially true if we have children, and you want to see all the shots of each of your children throughout your entire library. Now, Places takes another angle on this, and basically what it does is that if you have a camera that adds GPS data when you take a shot, such as an iPhone 3G, then it will log that in with the photo in the information field and then allow you to look at your shots all sorts of different ways using mapping views, grouping them by places, stuff like that. Now, the cool thing about Places in iPhoto is that if you don't have GPS technology with your camera, which most of us don't, quite honestly, especially with the camera that we shoot with most often, then you can easily add those coordinates by, in the information field, just typing the place where you took the shot. iPhoto will add the GPS data, and then you can group other shots that way, too. So if you took a whole bunch of shots in San Francisco while you were there, then you can just, you know, pick the first shot, say San Francisco, and then apply that information to all the shots from that shoot. And then, over time, as your library becomes basically places aware, then you can do things like plot a vacation, like all the stops that you made during a vacation, and you can plot it on a map. That map can be part of a book or a slideshow presentation that you do. It really have a lot of interesting options. So now with iPhoto 09, you'll be able to basically group photos together by either when the photo was taken, by where the photo was taken, or by who is in the photo. And I do think that we're going to see both places technology, the GPS technology, and the face recognition technology in the next version of Aperture. Now, I don't know when that next version is going to be out. Nobody ever knows, and Apple will never tell us. But I suspect it will be in the first half of this year. And, of course, we may see a more sophisticated version of this, and we may see all sorts of other goodies, too. But I think face recognition and GPS, or location-aware placement of photos, is a trend that we're definitely going to see in 2009. Okay, so much for the sort of the iPhoto Aperture new technology angle. I want to talk about CS4 for a minute, Photoshop CS4 for a minute. And this was interesting at best. I had a lab on CS4. I had a class on CS4. I did CS4 talks in the O'Reilly Media booth. And, you know, the thing that I notice most is, I think there's two things going on right now. But I do notice that people are just not in a hurry to upgrade to Photoshop CS4, Photoshop users. And I think there's a couple reasons for this. One is because even if you're a Photoshop user already, the upgrade is $199. And in this economy right now, that's a lot of money, especially if you have other things you want to do, buy a new camera, buy a lens, pay the rent, whatever it happens to be. So I think there's definitely a financial side to this. And then the other thing is many people, they're giving me the feedback that, it seems like every time they turn around, there's a new version of Photoshop and Adobe wants more money. And the Adobe cycle is 18 months. So basically, every 18 months, they try to release a new version of Photoshop. And 18 months isn't a very long time, really, since folks generally don't upgrade right away. And if they're using it at work, businesses tend not to upgrade right away, if at all. And again, in this economy, I think that's going to be even more true. Then maybe somewhere in the middle of the cycle, those that are going to upgrade do, which means then they turn around just a few months later and there's another version and on it goes. And I really felt some frustration around that, which is too bad because I very much like this version of Photoshop. CS4, for me, is the first version that really gives photographers a very nice, non-destructive, easy-to-use workflow from the moment you upload your photos all the way to outputting them. And this is the version where I think all the pieces, came together. So the timing, not so good for Adobe and even for those of us that are enthused about this version of CS4. So I did get good turnouts in the CS4 classes. I felt like people were coming sort of with the attitude is like, show me why I should consider this. And so there were a lot of times I sort of felt like they were sitting back with their arms folded, looking at me going, okay, convince me why I should upgrade to Photoshop CS4. Now, after the presentations, some folks were very much enthused about it. And I think I did generate some interest. And then I think, a lot of other folks will say, well, I probably will upgrade at some time, but I'm in no hurry. I haven't seen anything here that's going to budge me from that. And I think this would be particularly true for photographers that are already comfortable with Aperture or already comfortable with Lightroom. If they're already using one of those two applications and it's working well for them, then that really undermines a lot of the reasons why someone would upgrade to CS4. Because a lot of the reasons to consider CS4 really has to do with workflow and not the actual version of Photoshop itself. Yes, it has some nice additions. It definitely runs better. Now that they're using OpenGL for the zooming and things like that, the performance is beautiful. And they did add some new goodies, the 3D goodies, the adjustments panel, stuff like that. But overall, the application itself isn't super compelling to upgrade. So really, the reason to think about going to Photoshop CS4 is if you're not already using Lightroom or if you're not already using Aperture and you don't already have a great workflow. But you do use Photoshop, and those are the folks that I think should be looking closely at it. Well, because Aperture is having good market penetration, and because Lightroom is having good market penetration, then a lot of folks are going, I'm happy. And if I need to round trip out of Aperture, or if I need to round trip out of Lightroom to do some specific work in Photoshop, I can use the CS3 version or the CS2 version of Photoshop that I already have. And you know what? They're right. It's absolutely true. If you're an Aperture user and you're doing 90% of your image editing in Aperture and you only need to send out a file to Photoshop every now and then, CS3 is fine. Because Aperture's already covering, a lot of the great stuff that happens in Bridge and Adobe Camera Raw and so forth. And the next version of Aperture will probably cover it even better. And same is true for Lightroom also. So I think this is an interesting situation for Adobe and for Photoshop in general. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if some folks just sat this one out. Especially if they have CS3, some folks may just sit out CS4 and wait and see what happens with CS5. So it's going to be interesting. I think we'll know for sure in the springtime what's really going to happen. Obviously, right now folks are paying off the holidays and stuff like that, and just now getting back to work, probably not in the mood to make a software investment. But in the spring, I think if something's going to happen, that is when it will happen. Now, I've got some interesting data around this, and even among people who are Photoshop savvy and use Photoshop regularly, some of the numbers that we're seeing is that so far, only about 10 to 15% of folks using CS3 have upgraded to CS4, only about 10 to 15%. So you can look at that a couple of ways. One is that, well, there's tremendous potential still, or that a lot of those folks just aren't going to. And I think it's going to be a little bit of each. I think that, at some point we will see 30, 40% of those CS3 users upgrade, but certainly not around 60, 70, 80%. I just don't think we're going to see it with this version of Photoshop in this economy. So bringing that back to my talks, sometimes I was going, boy, I wish I was talking about something else right now, because I sort of felt like I was, representing Adobe, saying Photoshop is great and you should consider it. But that wasn't really my job. I was enthusiastic about CS4, but it's not really my job to sell Adobe's product for them. So it was work. It was work. And then, of course, a lot of folks who come see me regularly, they go, well, are you going to talk about taking pictures? And you're going to talk about some of this other stuff? And I go, well, no, I really wanted to focus on CS4 for this show because, it just came out and everything. And about halfway through the week, I was thinking, why did I say that? why did I make that decision? So anyway, so that's where we are on CS4. So just to kind of boil it down for you, if you are a Photoshop user, and particularly if you have CS3, and you're not using Aperture right now, and you're not using Lightroom, I would definitely take a look at CS4 version. And it's really terrific. And of course, you know, the book that I have, CS4 for Photographers, The Companion, really walks you through the entire workflow there and shows you all the new goodies. If you're an Aperture lover and or a Lightroom lover and you're just doing great and you have CS2 or CS3, I got to tell you, it's not super compelling to spend the extra money on Photoshop CS4. And in fact, knowing that we're probably going to see an Aperture update, you know, obviously sometime this year, you know, that's probably going to be $99, and it will probably give you, you know, a lot of what you really want for half the price. So there we are on CS4. Not all great news, especially if you're an Adobe shareholder, but that's what it is. You know, people are smart, you know, and right now they look at things very closely, and photographers especially, because the minute you add new software to your workflow, I mean, that's software that you have to learn and incorporate, and there's a time investment too. So CS4, I think, has got its work cut out for it. That being said, I love it. I really do love that application, and will continue to use it personally. Aperture is my home base. That Aperture is what I use to catalog all of my images, but I do like to use Bridge and Adobe Camera Raw, especially when I'm working on shoots that I have to turn around quickly, where I just need to pull a shot out and turn it around, edit it and turn it around, things like that. Or if I'm working with other people's photos, I'll use it, because I don't necessarily want to log those into my Aperture library. So I use Photoshop CS4 a lot, but even in my case, Aperture is my home base, and that's where all my photos live. Okay. So there's that. Then on the hardware front, during the State of the Union of Digital Photography, I talked about the Canon 5D Mark II and the Olympus E30, two cameras that I'm shooting with right now, two excellent digital SLRs. And I have to say that I've been surprised by the 5D Mark II. I mean, pleasantly surprised. I knew it was going to be good, but I didn't realize it was this good. I just did a shoot where I shot at ISO 3200 at an indoor basketball game with the 7200 millimeter f/2.8. I overexposed the shots by about half a stop. Sometimes the shots come out a little underexposed, I think, because of the bright walls and gyms sometimes. And I just looked at them in Aperture, a full screen, and they're beautiful. And the noise control at ISO 3200 is wonderful. So suddenly, you know, I can shoot wide open with that lens, that f/2.8 lens, have a fast shutter speed where I can stop action, and the shots look great. And I'm just going, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is, you know, something that I'd always hoped for, but I wasn't sure that I was ever going to see. And then the other thing that I have just been wildly pleased with is the HD video recording. The videos on this thing are wonderful. They look absolutely great. And I use the external microphone jack, and I put a little Audio-Technica microphone in a shock mount, and the shock mount slides into the hot shoe that sits on top of the 5D Mark II, and I get great audio too. Good, solid stereo audio coming in that accompany these HD videos, and they're great. The depth and the clarity on these videos are fabulous, and they're .mov files too, using H.264 compression. So they're very easy to handle. They're very easy to move around. Everything can read them. Obviously, QuickTime can read them, but any QuickTime-based application can read them easily too. So very, very pleased with the 5D Mark II. Those of you that have one, you should know that there's a new firmware update for it. And this firmware update addresses both the black dots phenomenon that occurs every now and then. I haven't seen it, and I did a whole bunch of night shooting. and I still couldn't get any black dots. And most people I know that have the 5D Mark IIs haven't seen them either, but they did show up on some people's cameras. And they mainly happen when you're shooting at night and you have a very strong light source, like a street light in a dark area, that the black dot will show up next to the street light. But like I said, even in my night shooting, I haven't been able to make it happen yet. And then there was some banding that happened, I think, in either the S1 RAW or the S2 RAW. And again, I haven't seen that either. But anyway, so there is a new firmware update for folks that have the camera. And I haven't updated mine yet because the camera is shooting so well. I kind of want to wait and see to make sure that this firmware update, you know, doesn't, you know, do something that I don't want it to do. So once I get the green light from, you know, the photography community on it, I'll go ahead and update it. For now, I'm going to sit tight until I get the feedback. But if you're doing shooting and you have had problems with the black dots or the banding, then the update's there. You can add it right now. The Olympus E30 continues to be fun to shoot with also. And, you know, I talked about it because it really introduces in-camera processing and, you know, art effects and multi-exposures and stuff like that. And it's really a lot of fun for people who don't like doing a lot of post-production but want to, you know, be able to do some creative work right there in the camera with a DSLR. And that camera was very well received when I talked about the Olympus E30. So both the 5D Mark II and the E30, I think, are cameras to look at. If you're, you know, the Olympus, I think, is around $1,200. And the 5D Mark II is an expensive camera. There's no way around it. It's around $2,700 for the body. So these are not cheap cameras by any stretch of the imagination. But if you really need that high-end performance, they're both worth looking at. So finally, I just want to wrap up with talking about our photo assignment for this month, which is about face. And I did a podcast on it last week. So if you're if you need a little bit more information about that, check it out. Looking for grab shots, I could use a few more. So if you're sitting on a grab shot, please send it in. And then finally, I want to welcome our new sponsor, SiteGrinder. I just started playing with the software, but basically it allows you to turn your Photoshop work into a fully CSS compliant web page. It's very exciting, and I look forward to seeing what I can do with it. And so SiteGrinder, Photomagico, and Red River Paper, the three sponsors for Digital Story right now, they're all three terrific, and they're in it for the long haul here. And we're going to have a great year with all three of them. So that will do it for me right now. Good to be back home. I had a great time in San Francisco. I hope this little update was useful to you. And I'm going to see you next week here on the Digital Story. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.